You're listening to Supervision with a Vision, where we discuss all things supervision. I'm your host, Sarah, professional counselor, marriage and family therapist, play therapist, eating disorder specialist, and cookie lover, with my co-host, Heather, marriage and family therapist, certified Together in Texas counselor, a Texas transplant from California, and outdoor adventurer. Hi, welcome to Supervision with a Vision. Today, Heather and I are talking about managing difficult relationships within supervision. This week, we read Mental Gymnastics, Navigating Challenging Relationships, published in Counseling Today 2022. And Heather, our article seemed very timely. I feel like you and I have been talking about this a lot lately, handling difficult relationships. That includes as a supervisor, as a counselor, right? Lots of different ways that we might handle difficult relationships. The first point in our article was have direct communication.
Yes. Mean what you say and say what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of a time where you realized maybe you weren't having direct communication, or you realized maybe the benefit of direct communication, either as a counselor or as a supervisor?
I think that I can think of two there on top of my head. One is the first time I'm meeting a supervisee or something like that. I try and set the precedent of like, and this is what it generally looks like when we do supervision. Like, you come in my office, you sit down, and we're going to talk about cases, but we're also going to cover ethics. And we're also, you know, so I try to give a snapshot about what it looks like. And then sometimes I've been surprised that they're shocked that they have to bring cases in, or they have to bring like, no, really, when I said that in our first meeting,
I meant it.
We're going to talk every week about cases.
I think that probably because you're getting these supervisees after they've had a little taste of supervision.
Right.
I think that means, that tells you their previous supervisor
just didn't, do that. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking as a counselor, I do this same kind of, almost the exact same thing with parents.
Yes.
That I'm very, very clear about how we communicate, how I don't communicate, how they can expect me to interact with them, and how they can interact with me in a way that works well. And when I, like, ways that I don't, I'm not going to answer questions or the phone at 9 o'clock on a Saturday or something.
Right. It's not going to happen.
It's going to be during business hours that I would respond. Maybe if they're trying to have a really long conversation, complicated question in email.
Right.
I'm going to direct it to in person.
Right. Or we can talk about that next time you're here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like that helps them to feel more confident or trust that we will have continued communication.
Absolutely.
They're going to know how that works, and they're going to know how to get my attention if they need to get my attention, or vice versa.
I can think of a similar situation with that, with a supervisee. In one particular situation I'm thinking of, they called me on a Friday. In their world, kind of felt unsure about going into the weekend with this client that had some self-harm behaviors and things like that. So I definitely followed up with them and gave what I would do and what they could also do to follow up with their client's parent and things like that. And then was like, and now you've done those things. You've done what you're supposed to do. So we'll talk on Monday.
Yeah.
That was so hard for them to accept.
Oh.
Like, so hard for them to like, I'm sure I'm supposed to do something else. No, you've done all the good things.
That was it.
Right. That's it.
And they're gently, but don't call me until Monday.
Right. We'll talk on Monday.
I think I do this as the counselor also a long time ago now, 10 years or more. I worked at an agency that provided services to quite a few families that had no experience with counseling.
Okay.
I was the first person they were meeting that was a counselor. And the setup of my office was really nice and pretty. It had a really long couch.
Okay.
The office was shaped funny. And so they had a bunch of these couches that fit the space really well, but it was just a really long couch. And all the time I was amazed at how many people, they didn't even know each other. They weren't, but all on their own, would come into my office and kind of look uncomfortable and start to try and lay down on that couch. And I would go, no, it's okay. We're going to sit.
We don't have to lay down.
In here, we don't lay down. But even giving them that kind, even though that seemed sometimes like breaking it down into such a simple thing, they needed that. They needed to know when we meet, we're going to meet for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to lay down.
Right. We're setting the expectation, setting what this looks like in a normal session.
Yeah. Can you think of times where you've had to have direct communication to repair a relationship? Maybe the it's already become difficult and you're trying to, because the examples we gave so far are nice, happy examples, right, where you start out with direct communication, right, and things are going well. But what happens if you have a difficult relationship and now you need to give some direct communication?
I think it's all about boundary setting, really. Mm-hmm. And I've recently have had a client want to come back, and a parent obviously needs to have say so and permission to do so, but completely try, okay, here's some dates available, and completely try to kind of like manipulate the situation. The parent came back with some of their dates. Nope, sorry, not available those days. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if we're going to be able to see you. That's okay. Do you need some referrals? Like, just try to be really directive and then manage that boundary that needs to be set, because I think sometimes people don't realize, like, you are not the only client we see.
Yeah.
We're seeing people all day, every day. Mm-hmm. If you've already asked me for my availability and I've given it to you, that's what I've really done.
That's really it.
Yeah.
So I think without saying it, you and I are both saying it's definitely easier to start out,
right,
with clear communication, direct communication, clear boundaries, than to have to try and go back and establish those. Mm-hmm. But if you do have to, you can't anticipate every single possible,
right,
boundary that could be crossed. But if you do have to go back, then you have to really be clear. And are you saying also really stick to it?
Yeah, don't make the exception just because. And I think especially counselors are, if we want to help someone and we're trying to be in that like mindset of like nurturing and caretaking and all these things. And especially I've had the conversation with my supervisee when they don't want to charge for a missing appointment. Like, mm-hmm, no, actually, you have to set that boundary, yeah, and your paperwork said you're charging for that missing appointment and you are.
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. We overlook things or we miss things, so we can't always be perfect, but it can mean a slippery slope.
Right.
If you miss being clear with your communication, but you can go back and do,
yeah,
it.
You can repair it.
Might be tricky.
Right.
The next point that we surmised from our article was identify motivation. And we're talking about that in our role as the counselor or the supervisor, we're going to identify the motivation of the other person that we're in a relationship with.
Right. So we're looking to see what would need to be shifted or changed in that communication. Why are they asking for certain things? Had an interesting one that comes to the top of my mind is a situation where one of my supervisees was working at a offsite location where they had a manager, mm-hmm, who just also happened to be a supervisor, uh-huh, but not their supervisor.
So this is a person who works at an agency, not an agency that you work at.
Right.
And within that agency, they have a boss,
right,
who manages them. And that boss happens to also be a clinician who's a supervisor, but is not their assigned state-approved,
right,
supervisor.
Right.
You are. So for this person, lots of people find themselves in that situation.
Right.
They've got to figure out how to manage more than one relationship.
Right. And I was quickly identifying that this supervisee was struggling because her boss really did have the best, and that's their boss's job, to have the best eyes on the agency as a whole. Like, mm-hmm, what works for this, mm-hmm, as a whole? It's great for the agency.
Right. So the boss is advocating for the company.
Right.
The boss isn't,
right,
their supervisor, so not advocating,
right,
for.
Right. And she's coming for clinical support with me, and I'm going, nope, that actually doesn't work. That's not a great idea for what you've told me about this client. But that client's seeing her in an agency situation. And so it's like, there's a lot of times I've had to be like, hey, wait, stop for a minute and think. Why would someone tell her that? Okay,
yeah,
she's not acting as a supervisor. She's acting as a manager, uh-huh, of an agency. And by all means, that works best for the agency.
Right.
She's not putting the client as the number one priority. My supervisee is seeing it as the client being the number one, mm, priority.
Talking about this, the handful of communication situations that we talked about at first with direct communication, I was kind of thinking finding their motivation helps me to know how to speak back to them or how to help them, how to help us have better direct,
right,
communication. So like the family members who would come in and try and lay, mm-hmm, down, I think their motivation was not to take a nap.
Oh no. They were like, what am I supposed to do right now?
They wanted to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. They were trying hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I could appreciate, oh, you'd really like to do the right thing right now. You're not sure what that is.
Right.
That if I could gently help them know this is the right thing, mm-hmm, then they were happy to do it.
Right.
So with your supervisee and realizing that her manager, her boss, has maybe different motivation than she does, what would the supervisee then do? Are you thinking about what you do as a supervisor?
I'm thinking about what I do as a supervisor. And part of that is supporting my supervisee. She brainstormed some ideas to take back to say, well, that other idea didn't work, but could we do these things differently? Uh-huh. This client situation is something that I would, knowing the details I know, it's going to be replicated. Like, mm-hmm. this is not going to go away. This is not a one-off. This is something that many teenagers that are in treatment at this type of facility are going to experience. Like, this is something that, like, I'm not trying to say agency whole, they haven't figured out yet, but I think there is no protocol yet for that, and they will figure that out. Like, mm-hmm. so hopefully there's a middle ground for my supervisee to be able to help her client in the most appropriate way while still mm-hmm. following the rules mm-hmm. of okay. the agency.
I wonder if this is relatable or compares. I had a supervisee, I've had more than one that I think this was their motivation, that we're talking about something that they need to do as part of their role in as a new counselor, and they don't want to do it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're avoiding.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
just not doing it.
Right.
And so the one that comes to mind is that I had someone who, in supervision, we talked through a client, and I decided, mm-hmm. they weren't really on board.
Right.
But I decided, yeah, this needs to be an abuse report made. Mm-hmm. And said, okay, so this week you need to make an abuse report. And the next time we met, I followed up and they had not made an right. abuse report. And I think really quickly, based on their body language and what they were saying, the supervisee was uncomfortable mm-hmm. making that abuse report and so didn't want to.
Right.
And I could relate to that and be understanding of, okay, this is uncomfortable or new for you, or you're worried about the mm-hmm. effect it will have. We still need to do it.
Right.
So I could adjust my response to them, but
right.
you still need to do it.
Yeah.
So with your supervisee, maybe it doesn't sound like they were uncomfortable. They were uncertain,
right.
maybe.
Right.
And so knowing their uncertainty maybe looked like dragging their feet
mm-hmm.
or not doing it right away or being mm-hmm. worried about how to address this with their boss.
Right.
If you have insight into that, okay, it's not that she's just refusing to do what I asked her to do, or she thinks my suggestion is stupid.
Right.
It's that she's worried that she now has to deal with her boss, who she knows does not have the same opinion.
Right. It's hard to face something when you know you're going to hit, like, mm-hmm. to look into something and go, I know we don't agree on this, but I still need to push this issue again.
Mm-hmm.
I think that plays out lots of ways for counselors, especially new counselors.
Yeah, that is scary. I think that we are pros at that. We do that
all the time.
Right. We do that all the time, every day. Mm-hmm. And it is something that maybe you have to build a capacity for as
right.
a counselor, that when you first start out as a counselor, you're not doing it all day, every day mm-hmm. for years with people. And so it's new and
you forget
scary.
It's right? different. I had a supervisee, it's probably been 5 years ago, but he sat down one day to talk to me in supervision and he goes, oh, and I messed up so big time on Monday. And this was like Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh no, what's your okay, yep. what's wrong? Yeah. Let's talk about it. He goes, I forgot to charge a client. Okay.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't seem like a big deal. Go ahead and charge him. Like right now, today. Like do it when we're done with this.
Yeah.
And like it had never crossed his mind that that was even a possibility.
Oh.
Because where he had worked before, it was so structured, like he had to charge it in immediately.
Like right now.
Right. And so he just thought that he was going to miss out on pay for that client because he goofed and didn't charge them Monday night at yeah. 7 or whatever.
Or imagine if he hadn't said that to you and more time had gone by.
Right.
And then he thinks, I mean, he's just completely written it off.
Right.
I lost that. But you understanding that, understanding mm-hmm. some of the background and his experience before could go, oh, well, I see why you thought that,
right.
but that's not the case. It's
right.
okay.
You can go do it now.
Our final point in the article that we read this week was the importance of intentional decision-making.
I think that's really important, especially when it comes to our supervisees and giving them one time to space, but for them to know, like, I'm intentional in the decisions that I'm making for us in supervision
mm-hmm.
and for them to know that, like, they don't need to panic about just making a decision to make one and getting over it, like they can yeah. kind of have that modeled a little bit.
So that's thinking that maybe sometimes our supervisees might have a hard time being intentional with their decision making. But do you think that as a supervisee or a counselor, there have been times where you felt like you were having a hard time being intentional? And you and I talked about what we are kind of thinking is the opposite of intentional decision making, and we decided that was reactive decision making. Right. So do you think you've ever caught yourself going, oh, I'm being reactive right now?
I have checked myself. Like, I kicked a client out one time. Mm-hmm. And like, I kicked him out and said, no, that's not okay or safe. Go take a break. Mm-hmm. And like, opened my door mm-hmm. and let them leave. Mm-hmm. And it was a grown adult person, not a child. But I remember in the moment going, am I physically reacting to this right now because of how he was treating his wife was so bad in session. I was shocked. Mm-hmm. Am I just like physically like, get out of my office?
Yeah.
Or am I actually making a cognitive choice of like, oh, he needs to leave. This is not safe. Like, uh-huh. I had to really stop and think. And I think it was probably a combination of both. I think I was like, okay, that's not going to happen in my office. So you need to go take a break. Mm-hmm. But I think also I was kind of like, I stood up immediately, walked over to my door and was like, oh, no, like it wasn't going to be an option. You're leaving.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of can go. Uh-huh. Is it overlap?
I mean, we're not perfect. So our supervisees will do this sometimes, but we'll do this sometimes
right.
too, where I felt like maybe I was catching myself or I was close to being really reactive. I used to have a supervisee, and when we met, I think I was intentional with the first decision that she had a 4 or 5 month old,
mm-hmm.
maybe 3.
Okay.
3 month old.
Small, a teeny tiny.
Yeah. Small enough that she needed to figure out childcare and she was worried about this, but the baby was small enough. She sat in the carrier mm-hmm. and slept
mm-hmm.
all the time. And I went, you know, I don't know if this will work forever, but let's try it out now.
Right.
Bring her with you. And
we'll see. Yeah.
And it did work for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, which mm-hmm. makes me think she was pretty little.
Yeah.
And it only got to the point where it really wasn't working when she was big enough that she was sitting on a blanket, not in the carrier anymore. And in my playroom, we would get out some of the pretend kitchen mm-hmm. stuff. And we were now distracted and worried and not focused on supervision because she would put some of the small kitchen items
in her mouth.
Right.
Yep.
And so I think I mentioned this before on the podcast. It was the strawberries and the pretend mushrooms.
For whatever reason.
And she could find those stupid pretend mushrooms in a whole pile of right. kitchen toys. And she could like fish out that little pretend mushroom in a second and pop it in her mouth before either one of us could catch it.
That's funny.
Get it. And so before she would come, I would get the mushrooms. So even then we were managing pretty well, but by the time she started pulling up
one
thing,
right?
I remember going, oh, this is going to be the end.
Right. This is it.
We're not going to be able to keep this up if she's like really moving around a lot. And so all of that felt like really intentional decision making. The day she pulled up on the coat rack and pulled it down on top of her head.
Ouch.
I was reactive. I was quick and jumped across the room and picked her. And I don't know, I think I'd like held her hand or played with her a little bit. But that day I jumped up across the room, threw the coat rack
off of her
and scooped her up and held her. And I went like, oh, this isn't my baby.
Wait, hang on. Did you want your mom?
Sorry.
Sorry.
And it was so quick. And I think she was we'd been in the same room a whole lot, but so no one was totally upset or surprised. Maybe me the most.
You were the most upset.
That I went, oh, this is it.
Right.
Maybe you should hold this baby, not me. But that felt really reactive mm-hmm. and not in a hurtful way, but I'd want to be intentional about all of the things I do.
Yeah. I think that's so important is that you can see that like that reactive wasn't bad reactive. That reactive mm-hmm. was really good reactive.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time, because mm-hmm. what if it was a baby that wasn't comfortable with me or a mom who didn't want me to do
don't
that?
Don't touch my baby.
Right. Those things might not have worked, but I think this maybe happens to me more often or I could feel it happening more often when I'm tired.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Or like the end of a long day. I've seen a lot of clients that maybe I can think of. I had a client not that long ago with an eating disorder and they were describing what they'd had for a meal or something, which is common.
Right.
And their combo of things, and it wasn't the world's worst combination of things, or I mean, it's not a bad example of something to have for breakfast, but I just went, ew, yuck.
You're like, wait, did that come out?
I mean, I did mean it. Like, I still think, yes, I was still trying to communicate. And also a characteristic of someone with an eating disorder that's progressed for a long time. They didn't know combinations that made sense.
Right.
And so they'd put together two foods that
don't taste good together. Right.
So I probably could have said that in a different way. But the first thing out of my mouth was, ew, yuck. And then I said, those are not flavors that go well together.
Right.
That those don't taste good in our mouth together. And so somebody without an eating disorder, no big deal.
Right.
Somebody with an eating disorder is going to interpret that in a way that could be not intended.
Right.
So intentional decision making. Can you think of a time where you just really nailed it and you had amazing intentional decision making?
I mean, I have a couple of CPS cases, actually, that I was like, yep, that's reportable and right now happening, and felt great about the outcome.
I have one.
Okay.
I just thought of one. I know this isn't the only one, but I always feel like this when I think, that was so like superhero counselor-like of me.
Ta-da!
Yeah, that like, wow, that was a really great moment that I said what needed to be said, and it was the right timing, and it was... In some cases, maybe felt courageous because it was maybe a hard thing to say, but it was needed to be said. I worked at a hospital, and I was a pretty young counselor at the time. I worked at a hospital, and it was a locked unit. And right outside the hospital was the waiting area, a reception desk, and a bathroom.
Okay.
And I was waiting on a family, parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to meet with the parents, and then we were going to pull the kid in and meet as a family. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm kind of like peeking around and looking and going, where are these parents? I realize they're in the bathroom together.
Oh, okay.
And so I stood. I think I went through all of this.
Right.
I went like, what am I going to say? And then I thought, I'm kind of mad.
Yeah.
Well, I can't. I'm mad. And good or not good, I don't know. I had enough time while they were in the bathroom together for me to go through this thought process that I went, I'm so mad. Wait, that's not going to be effective.
Right.
If you're mad, you're not going to communicate what you need to communicate. So I thought through what I was going to say and how I was going to do it and where would I, what would I. So I decided, I mean, how more effective than to be really, really, really direct? So I decided I wasn't going to wait till they were in my office. I went and stood right outside the bathroom door.
Yes, because this is where you're supposed to meet me. Not sure why you're both in the bathroom.
So I stood right outside the bathroom door until they both walked out together, giggly, you know, younger than they were at the time, gave them my best mom look.
Right.
And said, I think I even identified their motivation. I appreciate that the two of you don't get a lot of time together and that you would like to have time with each other, but when your child is in admitted to the hospital and waiting on an appointment is not the time, nor is this an appropriate place for that.
And you were like,
and I was like, I killed it. It was so good. And the looks on both of them, and they, I'm telling you, they walked out giggly, like holding hands.
Right.
And man, they dropped each other's hands quickly.
They're like, uh-oh.
And I think the dad said something like, yes, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. It won't happen again. It fit what we're talking about. Direct communication, identify the motivation, intentional decision making. I made it clear that we were going to move on.
Right. You made, you didn't, there's nothing. We're done. We had this.
We don't need to talk about it anymore. On.
Right.
We do need to get on with our appointment that needs to start right now.
Right.
And I thought, oh, amazing superhero killer moment. Yeah. So I think I've had a couple of those that I get excited that, man, that was so good. Such good timing. So can you think of any like that?
I have had a couple of them with, usually it's with when I'm bringing in another family member, right? Like I'm already working with one client and I'm bringing in either a parent or a sibling or something like that. And usually if I have a teenager, I always say, okay, we're going to talk to mom and dad about X, Y, and Z. So they're prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this particular case, they said to me, well, you know, that's not really going to work. My dad likes to talk. And I was like, that's okay. We'll stay on topic.
Yeah.
And we go in and sure enough, dad's wandering.
He's a talker.
He's wandering at other things. And so I redirected and I was like, actually, we only have 20 minutes left. And our focus is to make sure that we talk about our week coming up and what things are going to change, you know, in the house and dynamics. And he still wandered. His child gently corrected him, like, dad, take it seriously. This is really important to me.
Well,
and so we wrapped up at the end and I said, and next time, if you'd like to set an appointment with one of our other, like, like to set an appointment with one of our other therapists. They can maybe help you with some of these like executive functioning skills. And he was like, yes, I'm so sorry. When I'm nervous, I deflect and I, you know, and he's going on and on, which I hadn't even picked up on that he was nervous because I had a relationship with him. But I thought at the same time, I was like, oh, that was so good. I even said anything because he wouldn't have even told me that. And then I could have a different appreciation for where he was at. Like, okay. I didn't even pick up on it.
Well, I was going to say, I think the way you said it must have made it possible for him to say
hear
that.
It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To like, oh, yeah. I do this thing where I get worked up.
So difficult relationships are super challenging. They are definitely a part of being a counselor and a supervisor, but it's exciting and rewarding when we,
we hit the target.
When we nail it, Well, thanks today for listening to Supervision with a Vision.
You've been listening to Supervision with a Vision. Head on over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Therapy Academy to join the conversation and get show notes. We'll be back next week with more Supervision with a Vision.